So look, if you want to grow your wealth, your income, and increase the amount of time off, then these are the shortcuts that can help. Welcome to the Wealth Creation Podcast.
And welcome everybody, it's Dan Latto speaking, hope you're well today. So today's Wednesday the 17th of November, and we're here in Spain, a little bit cold outside. The dog's just come to say hello, this is Hannah, I know you can't see her down there. We need a second camera for the dog, don't we? We need a dog camera. Anyway, welcome everybody, hope you're well today. Got a couple of things I want to talk about in the Property Cash Flow Show. And if you listen to this on the podcast, then also thank you so much for all of your support over the last 5 years. Over 600 podcasts. I wouldn't have kept on doing them unless I'd have got the emails and the requests for more podcasts that I did actually get. So thank you so much. That keeps me going, basically. Because sometimes you feel like you're talking to nobody, and then you see the stats, and you're like, oh, people do listen. And it's actually quite a few people over the last 5 years. So thank you very much for that. Anyway, without further ado, let's get into today's show. We're going to talk about four different things today. So we've got inflation and investing in property and, you know, the impact on that. Then we're going to talk about the state of the housing market. We'll cover sales, we'll cover rentals as well. We're going to talk about what's going to happen next year. Then we're going to go through what's included on the property sourcing training. Some people ask me about that, so it's like, let's just run through that. And then finally, we're going to talk about what I'm personally looking for when I'm investing in property. What is it that I'm looking for? What are the locations? Any particular numbers that I'm looking for in, you know, when we're working out the numbers and so on? But let's crack on with the first one. So inflation and investing in property. How does that affect you? Look, if you've not got property yet, then any property that you do buy will be increasing in price over the next few years. That's how I see it. And obviously, this is not financial advice. I'm not allowed to give financial advice. I'm not qualified. I'm not qualified to give financial advice. I've only been in property for 23 years. If you need to go get financial advice, you should go get to speak to somebody who makes their money from a job, like a financial planner. They make money from their job. And so therefore, they are best placed to give financial advice because they rely on a job for income. Clearly the best place. Obviously, I'm tongue-in-cheek there. It kind of winds me up a little bit. But anyway, you know, the guys that write for the FT, they clearly know what they're talking about, which is why they have to work for the FT in order to get an income. Anyway, inflation and property. So this is why we invest in property. We knew going back 23 years ago, and inflation goes up and down, okay? Never negative, is it? Have you noticed? You might go through a small period of negative inflation, which is called deflation, right? But it doesn't last for long. Prices are always going up, and car prices are always going up. Petrol prices are always going up. A loaf of bread is always going up. House prices, although they may have dipped because of the 2007/8 crash, they're still going up, and they will still go up, and crypto's going up, and everything goes up, from headphones to Coca-Cola to phones to everything. And your income, interestingly, probably hasn't gone up that much. I mean, on average, especially at the lower end, not necessarily minimum wage, because that tends to go up in line with inflation. I know they've just had an increase there as well. But it's funny, isn't it? Like, for some reason, income doesn't seem to have gone up, but let's just get clarity on that. Unskilled income hasn't increased in value. If you've got a skill, and I keep saying this, you know, to as many younger people as I can, you need to get skilled up in something. And the more skill that you have, the more money you'll be able to command. But if you don't do that and you're staying at the lower price point because you haven't got the skills and you're just arms and legs and a head dropping off food via Uber Eats or whatever it is, then your value that you're giving to the community is much lower than someone who can say, I don't know, do heart surgery or be an estate agent. I know people hate estate agents, but they're still offering value because of their experience and they have to get qualified and all of that extra stuff. So why do we invest in property then? Well, we knew going back 23 years ago that property prices were here, and over a period of time, they'll start going up to here. And when that happens, you know, people's income has to go up accordingly to be able to afford those properties, okay? And this isn't meaning that people's income is going up and they're making more money, because the cost of living has gone up in line with that. And this happens. And one of the things that's fundamentally built into our money system is inflation. And the reason I know that is because the Bank of England has never stopped printing money, ever. it's constantly printing money. And obviously recently, we call it quantitative easing. It's got a nice fancy word for the fact that it's printing out money, so much more money, pound after pound, £10, £50, £100. It's printing so much money. In fact, in the US in the last, I think, 18 months has printed more money than at any time previous combined. So in the last 18 months, the US has printed more money than at any time in history combined. That just shows you how much money people are printing. I don't know what it is for the UK, but it can't be far off that. So inflation is built into the very system that we live in, this monetary fiat system. If you think cryptocurrency is going up because of cryptocurrency, it kind of is, but it's kind of like a hedge against fiat. Fiat is being deflated right now because of inflation, and crypto is a hedge against that. It's one of the reasons why we've gone into cryptocurrency. I wouldn't say we're massively into it, but you know, we've got six figures invested in cryptocurrency, which I would say is quite heavily invested compared to most. So inflation is a function of money printing and the government of printing money. So inflation has to happen. It's always happened. It will always happen. You might have periods of deflation. And so one of the reasons why we invested in property is that £37,000 house that we bought, you know, are now going for £95,000. And that was 23 years ago when we were buying those units. We had a house that went from 40 to over 210. It's worth about maybe 165 now. And again, that was my first house bought 23 years ago. City centre flats haven't increased as much. You know, we got stuff that we bought for, I don't know, 65 grand. They're going for 95 grand. So it's a 50% increase in the last 10 or 15 years. Still fairly decent. But one of the reasons why we have confidence that this will continue to go and continue to happen is because the government keeps on printing money. And when the government prints money, inflation is embedded into the system. It has to happen. So there's some extra things that are happening there as well. So as house prices are going up, the standard cost of living is going up as well. And as the standard cost of living is going up, wages increase as well. Obviously not as fast as we would like. You know, if wages increase by double tomorrow, I'd be a happy man. I'd double my rents, obviously. But not only has property prices increased in value, but rental values have increased in value as well. And so if I was to look at one of my old spreadsheets that I've got on here, let me just go to it here. I'm not going to show you this spreadsheet because this is my own data and we don't share this stuff. But let me just tell you, I'll give you an example. If I go back all the way to 2010, so I started tracking back in 2010, and I've got a tab open on a spreadsheet for every single month from 2010 to this month. So if I go to January 2010, here we are. We've got stuff that was rented at 425, for example. Now that's rented at 595 right now, which is what? It's what, about 30-40% increase in the last 10 years. Then we've got other stuff. Some of these are artificially kept low, by the way, because we've got tenants who've been in for a long time. We tend not to increase the rent when tenants have been in for a long time. But others, like we've got this one here, a 3-bed detached house at 595. That's now rented at 895. So that's what, another 50%. So rents have increased 50% in the last 11 years. Will they increase another 50%? Yeah. Maybe more, actually. Rents have shot up recently. The reason why rents have shot up is because landlords have left the market. So there are other things coming into explaining why rents are going up in value. It's not just because of inflation. There are other factors like tax on landlords and that kind of thing, removal of wear and tear, increase on capital gains tax and so on, that have made kind of a perfect storm for rent increases, which we'll talk about soon. But we knew that inflation, house prices go up, rents would go up, wages would go up, iPhones would go up, microphones would go up, cameras would go up, lighting would go up. Everything's gone up, folks. It's just built into the system. And so if you're looking to start buying and investing in property, sometimes, you know, you might have to wait 10 or 15 or 20 years. In fact, I mean, we got one property that we bought maybe 15 years ago, bought way overpriced just before the crash, paid way over the odds for it, way more than we should have done in hindsight. It was an emotional decision because it was one I was moving into. We still rent that. We bought for 250. It's worth maybe, it's probably worth 210 now, something like that. So it's still in negative equity. But you know what we do? We just wait another 10 years and then it'll get out of negative equity. That's all we have to do. In the meantime, We're getting £1,000 a month on that property, which is way low. Like those tenants have been in for 3 years and we've not put the rents up. When those tenants move out, that's going to go to £1,400. It's got 3 roof terraces, 2 car parking places, and all the people that come over from the Far East, they love that location because it's next to the university. So we'll get £1,400 a month on that one when it becomes empty. We're not, you're not increasing it for now. But we know that this is going to happen. It's built into the system, and that gives us confidence enough to go out and invest. And when people say, oh, investing, stocks and shares, property, oh, no, it's risky. And you ask them, I go, what do you know about inflation? They don't know anything about it. How does inflation affect stock prices? Because your hedge against inflation is assets. So that's stocks and shares. It's cryptocurrency. It's property. It's gold. For God's sake, I can't believe I'm suggesting do not buy gold. I'm not suggesting that. It's up to you. Buy it if you want. But it's not in my... I might be wearing gold in my hoodie. But I'm not buying the damn stuff, right? But even that is a hedge. Postal stamps, right? Not the ones from the Royal Mail, but, you know, the old black pennies, I think they're called, half pennies. They're still going up in value. You've got NFTs now, which will be going up in value. All of this is hedges against inflation. And when people say, don't invest because it's risky, ask them how much they know about inflation, and that will tell you whether you should listen to these people or not, because most people haven't got a blinking clue what we're talking about. Anyway, next up, let's talk about the state of the housing market. So we've got a couple of topics here that I want to cover off. So first of all, let's talk about rent increases. We've just been talking about rent increases, but I think it's important to cover this. So rent increases hit a 13-year high as demand for property doubles in the central zones of major cities. And for the first time in 16 months, London rents are rising. I mean, you know, a lot of landlords, I think, were selling up and coming out of London. So there's an influx of people moving out of London. So rents dropped because landlords were having to drop price to get people in. And now that the pandemic has kind of slowed down a bit, people are moving back into London, and that's now pushed up the rents in London city centre. Like, literally, having that conversation that I just talked about just there about why rents dropped and why rents have gone up is one of the reasons why we've been successful in property for the last 23 years. It's because we can take a situation and we can read between the lines. Forget about what other people are saying. Work it out for yourself. If you can do the calculations and work out what's actually going on underneath the market, you're going to do really, really well. And sometimes you're going to get it wrong, sometimes you're going to get it right. But every time you get it wrong, you're improving on it. So the typical cost of renting a home in the UK, excluding London, is £809. So that's a 6% increase. Demand for rental homes is 43% above the year average. But the number of properties available to rent is 43% lower than usual. Now, there's a couple of things I want to talk about this. But let me just grab a quick drink. So what I want to talk about here is the fact that one of the things that confuses me is because of Brexit, obviously there's a lot of people that have been leaving the UK. They've been going back to their home country in the EU. And so that's less people renting property. It's less people putting pressure on the rental market. Having said that, I think Section 24 and now landlords, and we you know, if you go back to my podcast, we predicted that this is what would happen. When this year's or last year's rent returns went in on the tax returns, landlords are going, what on earth? What the heck am I doing this for? And they're selling up. And that's why the properties have gone back on the market. So now, yeah, there might be more properties on the market and definitely an increase on auction properties and so on. But there's not enough rental properties. Even though people have gone back to their home countries in the EU to a certain extent, there's still not enough rental properties because the government, in their wisdom, decided to tax landlords out of the sector. Landlords have left. It's pushed rental prices up. Why do you think there's less rental properties, 43% less, available than the five-year average? Why is that? Possibly. Section 24, anyone? Increasing capital gains tax, removal of wear and tear, removal of tenant fees. We can't even charge someone for referencing. So when we say to a tenant, have you got a CCJ, a county court judgment? And we go, no. And you go, okay, let's reference you. You spend your £40 on referencing. Oh, you got a CCJ? Oh, yeah, sorry, I forgot about that. We can't even charge them, even though they lied to us. We can't even charge them. So all this is putting upwards pressure on those rents. And it's putting outwards pressure on landlords to leave the sector. Because they're like, do you know what? Screw this. We've just come out of a pandemic, and we've also just come out of the fact that landlords could not evict their tenants over the last 18 months. What do you think that does to a landlord? I'm selling. As soon as this is done, I'm selling. As soon as I get rid of this tenant, I'm selling. Why do you think there's now an increase on auction properties? Where are those auction properties coming from? Is it Mr. and Mrs. Smith maybe going bust? Might be. But is it also, Mr. and Mrs. Smith is Joe Public, by the way, but is it also landlords who are going, screw this for Game of Soldiers, I am done, and they've put the properties back on the market? And those stupid people go, yeah, but more properties coming on the market means that house prices will drop. Oh, have house prices dropped in the last 2 years? Have they? You're an idiot if that's what you think. I'm sorry if you're one of those people that thinks that, but we argue this all day long on Twitter, and those people go, I don't know what I'm talking about. And you're right, I've only been doing this for 23 years. We called it at every step of the way. The only bit we didn't call was a crash in 2007, 2008. That's the only bit we didn't get. Everything else we've been absolutely spot on, because we've got really good at being able to read the markets. Anyway, that's what's been happening with the rental side. Let's talk about the sales side. So here we go. What's in store for 2022 then? Here we go. An estimated 15 million homes are expected to change hands in 2021. Sorry, let me rephrase that. 1.5 million homes. I got excited then. I thought it was 15 million. I'm like, that's a lot. That's like a third of the entire housing market. 1.5 million homes are expected to change hands in 2022, making it the busiest year yet for the housing market. 22% of people currently want to move, significantly higher than the average 5%. So four times as many people are looking to move. Annual house price growth was 6.6% at the end of September, is expected to slow to 3% in 2022. Now, my portfolio is in the millions, okay? But I will easily accept a 3% increase on my portfolio value every single year for the next 20 or 30 years. Compounded over the next 20 years, you're talking what? I mean, just without compound, it's 60%. With compound, you're probably talking 70, 80, 85%. So huge, huge uplifts. And this isn't taking into account anything else that's in the pipeline that we don't know about. Asteroids, aliens, proof of life after death, Elvis coming back riding the Loch Ness Monster on a flying saucer. None of that would surprise me in 2021 or 2022. These are the market dips and dives that nobody can foresee. And all this happens within a market, you know. It has to happen. A market just doesn't increase slowly. It goes up and it goes down. It goes up and it goes down. And obviously there's compound interest taking place there as well. So there's an awful lot to do with property right now. Now, if you're thinking about selling, now's probably a great time to sell, quite honestly, because houses are flying off the market. And it's really difficult to put offers in. You got to put offers in way above the asking price to get them sold, unless you can step in to a broken chain, or unless you're going directly to vendors who've got a financial problem and need to sell like as fast as they can. But if you're out in the market on Rightmove and going to your estate agents, you got to be really lucky. You got to have the cash ready. So now's probably a good time to sell. Next year, I know they're saying house price growth is going to drop down to 3%, but I think next year will be a good time to sell as well. Is it a good time to buy right now? I honestly think it's always a good time to buy. I think if you're cash flow averaging, dollar cost averaging, so you're buying one a year, one every 4 years, one every 10 years, whatever you can afford, it will dollar cost average uneven and house price growth will just go up slowly and surely. I think next year will also be a good time to sell. As a buyer, you got to get a bit more funky on how you're going to be searching for your deals. How are you going to find your deals? And that, interestingly, leads me on to the next topic, which is property sourcing. So let's talk about property sourcing, shall we? Because if house prices are going up and they're selling really fast and you want to be buying property, you're going to have to find a different way of buying that property. And this is not looking on Rightmove. It's not going to estate agents. This is really about going direct to vendor. And so in this particular session, I just want to talk about our property sourcing training. And we'll talk about what we actually cover. So let me just share my screen here. Our property sourcing training is £27, which is just bonkers, quite frankly. You get 90 videos spread over 15 modules, which literally teaches you everything that you need to know from start to finish. It's got a bunch of resources, got some adverts, got some copy that you can use on your adverts. It's got example leaflets. It's got example contracts. It's pretty good, I have to say. And we've sold, like, not just hundreds, we've sold thousands of these, of this product. Absolutely thousands. And if you think about, this is the competition that you're up against, then, you know, you're up against other thousands of people. Now, one of the good bits for you, if you're thinking, oh, I want to get into property sourcing, but I think it's too diluted, too many people doing it. We know that when people sign up, they actually, they get partway through the course, or they get halfway through, or get to the end, and then they stop. Because actually getting the results can be quite hard, and they give up after they failed the first time, or the second time, or the third time. And I can tell you from experience, folks, that you've got to keep on going, keep putting one foot in front of the other. Failure leads to success. You've got to keep on going. But getting it wrong and understanding why you got it wrong, so then you can adapt and change it, so you start getting it right, that's where your success will actually start to come from. So let's go through what's included in the property sourcing. And I've made it bigger, but I'll make it bigger again in a second, just so that you can see it. I'm just going to grab another quick drink. So, module one. We talk about what property sourcing actually is. Some people still don't know, and that's all right. Why should we? But we go into exactly what it is. And then module two, we're going to talk to you about the type of deals that you can actually do. Let me make this bigger. If I make it too big. Oh, no, that's fine. I can just scroll up, can't I? There we go. So we talk about the types of property deals that you can do. There's all sorts of different types of deals that you can do. And this is one of the things that when you generate a lead, and we'll talk about that in a minute, when you generate a lead and you're on the phone and Mrs. Smith is talking to you, you don't know what sort of deal that's going to be. So is it a lease option? Is it a rent-to-rent? Is it a below market value sale? Is it an assisted sale? These are the type of deals that you can do. But you don't know what that deal is going to be until that person picks up the phone. So we get some people and we go, oh, I just want to do assisted sales. And it's like, okay, but the marketing won't just generate assisted sales. Your marketing will generate phone calls, all sorts of different phone calls. And your job is to qualify that phone call so that you understand the type of deal that you're going to do. And then number three, we're going to talk about finding deals, and we're going to talk about property sellers, and we're going to talk about being everywhere at all times. And this is about being multi-present across the whole social media platform. Plus, in your marketing, you have to be on across multiple platforms, from not just leaflets and newspapers and, you know, banner ads and so on. But you've got to be everywhere at all times. When I had my lettings agency, and I think I mentioned this in the last podcast, I was speaking to a landlord, and in the end, he said, look, I had to use you guys because you were just everywhere. And just as he said that, one of our little orange cars drove past that was all stickered up. I went, oh, look, there's one of our cars. And he's like, look, you see, you're everywhere. And you know, the more places you are, the more omnipresence that you have, the easier it will get. And also the more credible you will be, because we keep seeing you time and time and time again. I'm sure those people who've seen my stuff, unless it's recommendation, but people who've seen my stuff for a number of years, they know what they're getting, and they know the honesty and the credibility that comes with that, because they've seen me so often, because they've seen me everywhere at all times. Module four, we're going to talk about finding buyers, how to find them, what marketing you can use, and so on. And then number five, module five, is really important. So we've got not just negotiating, like how do you negotiate these deals? But we've also got about working the numbers. Like, what should the numbers be in order for you to get a deal across the line? And then knowing what those numbers are will put you in a good position to negotiate, because now you're going to know exactly how much money to offer on this particular deal. And you can demonstrate what the offer is going to be and why it has to be that offer and why the price that they were asking for is overvalued. Even in an upmarket, it's overvalued. And so you need to understand all of that. So we cover the different types of negotiating that you can do, and we talk about working the numbers. And then number six is, once you've got a deal, in module six, we're going to talk about presenting the offer and how you're going to package up this deal. And I've seen some package deals, and it's like a one sheet of paper, and it's not got even the right information. It doesn't have yield on it. It's not got return on investment. It's got hardly any information on at all. And it's just like, buy this house, it's 50 grand or whatever, 150 grand. It's ridiculous. And so presenting the deal is really, really important to your potential investors. Module seven, we talk about getting a deal across the line. You'll be amazed how many of these deals actually fall through unless you do some of these things, which will enable you to get the deals across the line. Something as basic as communicating with all parties, both sides of the solicitors, any estate agents, if they happen to be involved. We don't like estate agents, so we try not to use them. Within the realms of property sourcing, I mean. But just communicating with everybody. The vendor, for example, we've seen people trying to get deals through. I'm like, when did you speak to the vendor, the person selling a house last? Oh, 2 months ago. What, and it's fallen through? Yeah. What, and you're wondering why? Yeah. Maybe you should have spoken to them, like, you know, every week. You know, really important stuff. Module 8 is about mindset. One of the things that used to bug me, by the way, we'd go on weekend courses and they'd say, okay, this is the mindset section. And then 22 minutes later, they're finished on mindset. Mindset is not a 22-minute conversation, folks. It has to be said. Mindset is actually 90% of everything that you do. Because if this isn't right, this won't be right. You won't be able to do the work. And when you get hit with your first failures, you just give up. The module on mindset is probably one of the most powerful modules. Even though it's a property sourcing training and all the information is about property sourcing, the module 8 on mindset is so, so important. Number 9 is about marketing and content creation strategies. If you can't market what you do, like I say this to people, I say, do people know what you do? And they go, no, no, I'm going to keep it quiet. And I'm like, why are you keeping it quiet? The whole point of doing this is to create a fuss and energy around you so everybody knows about you. So when your friends go to a dinner party and somebody else is saying, oh, I got bailiff knocking on my door yesterday, I have to sell. Like, oh, I've got a guy that can help. He'll pay you he'll pay me 500 quid and he'll buy your house. Like, everybody should know about what you do. So the marketing, the content creation strategy is really important. The other thing that I love, by the way, if you know how I run my businesses, I really don't work a lot of hours. So, you know, people were talking about, oh, 12 hours. And I'm like, 12 hours a day? And they're like, yeah. I'm like, dude, I'm lucky if I get 12 hours a week. I don't want to work, you know, all day, every day. That's the last thing that I do. The only things that I really do these days are these lives. I do these lives and I do the strategy sessions for when we get somebody wanting to sign up for our digital marketing. That's pretty much it, other than a couple of team meetings. I really don't work a lot of hours. And the reason I don't work a lot of hours is we outsource everything. I mean, when I say we outsource, we have internal team members, so they're employed. So it's not all going to an external agency. We have to recruit people. But it's not me physically doing the work. I have other people doing the work that are employed by my company. Outsourcing is huge. Now, you have to still do everything yourself to begin with, but then when you get used to it, then you can start to outsource. And we cover how to outsource, where to outsource. And then module 11, we look at what systems you need and what systems you can implement to make this run smoother. And like at first, you won't have a clue and it will all be all over the place. And then as you start getting more experience, then you can start putting the systems in place and the systems will help you, you know, have a bit more information about what are the systems that you need to have in place and how do you put them in place. Like nobody ever teaches this in school or university or at college. Where do you learn this information? Well, you learn it here. Module 12, what to do if you haven't got results yet. This is, again, I mean, I keep saying each module is important. It's been a while since I've looked at these and I'm like, this is so important because I guarantee most people won't get results off, like straight off the bat. It's just not how it works. You know, if only, well, I was learning to run the 100 meters and then lo and behold, I'm in the Olympics. It was amazing. So that was nice. Do you remember the fast show? Oh, and then we won the lottery again the second time. And that was nice. The first time you do anything, it's not going to work. And, you know, this is exactly the same. This all comes down to hard work and putting in the results, the work in order to get those results. But we give you some tips on what to do if you haven't got the results yet. We also give you some access to some amazing resources that will help you on your way. Module 14, these are kind of like more bonus modules, really. But handling your finances on wealth creation, if you don't get this right, you know, if you can't manage £1,000 a month, why do you think you're able to manage £10,000 a month or £100,000 a month? Because most people, their expenses creep up and they either spend slightly more than they're just earning or slightly less than they're just earning. And actually what should happen is their expenses should stay still and their income goes up. It might go up slightly in proportion, but that's it. And this is down to bad money management and bad budgeting and so on. So we stick module 14 in there. There's no point in teaching people how to make a lot of money if they can't handle the money they already make. And so that's why that's in there. And then the last section here is goal setting and time management. Like, this is every module is better than the last module. This module, I could sell this on its own for 27 quid and we'd get great testimonials from it. It's so good. When you get really, really busy and you implement this time management system, it's going to change your world. We had a guy working 60-hour weeks and he was so, so busy. He came out to the villa and we ran through what he was doing. And he was all over the bloody place, putting fires out, all over his place. His mind was all over the place. And so we got him onto this system. And then a month later, he just booked himself like a 6-week holiday in Vietnam, I think it was. And he dropped his 60 hours down to 20 hours because that was how powerful the time management system was in combination with things like outsourcing and putting systems in place and all of that kind of thing. And then there's some goal setting in there as well. I'm not going to read through the testimonials for reviews. We've actually got loads and we've got 6 there. And then I think further up, or is it further down? We've got another one there. We've got loads. Some of these were off Facebook. Some example deals that people have done. So we've actually got a lot more testimonials. One thing that I'm really bad at is sending the testimonials over to my team to create the images for the testimonials to put on the page. And that's something I really need to get done. But we'll get there eventually, I'm sure. And that's the property sourcing training. It's £27. It's on the website. Yeah, you should go take a look at that. So let's go on to the next session. What am I looking at when I'm buying properties? So this is really, really important. And I'm just wondering, actually, do we put some examples on from Rightmove? Let me just bring Rightmove up. Yeah, let's do it. Let's do it live. I like looking at Rightmove. I do. I enjoy it. It's one of, you know, one of my little pleasures in life. Let's have a look at Leeds, West Yorkshire, for sale. And let's bring it over. And then I'm just going to share my screen again. Where are we? Second screen. Here we go. Okay, let's have a look. And we'll make the screen bigger. It's a nice looking house, isn't it? LSA, not the best of the locations, but 475 is a lot. Still got some very nice houses here. 2.95 million in Leeds, 7 bed. Looks very nice. Let's go down to lowest price because we're not quite there yet for those bigger ones. And also, we're just going to put in some filters here. Don't show new home buying schemes or retirement homes. We don't want those. So let's get rid of them. And also, right at the bottom end here, we're looking at a lot of auction type properties. And we don't really want auction properties. I have bought at an auction, but I'm not fussed about auctions, in all honesty. I like to know what are my numbers. And I like to work out what my numbers are. And I would rather, you know, if my numbers work at 40 grand, I'm happy paying 40 grand. I don't need to pay 30 grand at an auction and then find them competing with 20 other people that haven't got a clue. Because then invariably what happens is at an auction, it gets sold for 50 and it's not worth 50. So I'm not over keen on auction stuff, but let's just get rid of auctions. I'm just going to give you a couple of different examples here. So we're going to look at 3 beds. And the whole point of this, by the way, to give you an insight as to how my brain works, because I think you might either be horrified by that, as I am often, or you might actually go, oh, I get it now. Okay, this one's an online auction, 69 grand, we want to stay away. Look at all these auctions, you've got to scroll through a lot of these. I think we looked at this one a couple of days ago, 90 grand, we were talking about converting that into 2 1-bed flats, but that would work. Let's also go for property types and let's have a look at semi-detached and detached. There's something I'm going to focus on in a minute. One of the reasons why I wanted to do this. So this one here, it's a guide price. Let's get off auctions, not that one. That one there, oh, public notice, we don't want those. Chain 3, Middleton, that's all right. Let's have a look at this one. 140 grand on a 3-bed semi. It's unbelievable how much prices have actually gone up. The first thing that I would absolutely do on this is remove that horrendous cladding. It just looks horrible. But let's just have a look at the back because there's something I want to show you. Oh, my goodness me. So I think this property is really high priced. I mean, I'm not a hugely knowledgeable about LS10 and Middleton. I know it's not a place I personally want to live. 140 grand seems overpriced, but look at the state of the inside. So obviously this is a refurb. The electrics will need doing, more than likely. The pipe work will need doing, more than likely, because it'll have lead piping. Unless you like living in the 70s, you might want to keep that. I don't know, but not for me. But there's some opportunities here to actually extend it and make it all open plan and then have an extension on the back. I mean, obviously, it looks like an older person's home. I'm not sure how old they are, actually. Look at that fireplace. I've actually got one of those fireplaces in one of mine. that's the back. So what? This is the thing that I wanted to get to here. In order to make properties more attractive, and I've done this on a number of occasions, and it's like one of my little secrets, I actually put a swing set in the back. So I put a swing and a slide set in the back. And the reason why I do that is two reasons. Either if I'm renting it, guess what type of tenant I'm going to get if it's a three-bed house with a swing and a slide set in the backyard? It's a family, right? How long do you think families, like, yeah, how long do you think families are going to stay in one place for? What do families actually want? They want a consistency of location. They don't want to be having to move around. It's one of the things that scares me now. We live in a rented accommodation here in Spain. We thought about buying it, but then it keeps getting flooded out. So we're like, right, we're not going to buy this damn place. We'll keep living here as long as we can, but we're not going to buy it. And I'm like to the wife, why are we buying the place that we live in? We should be renting. I have that belief system. But our little one, you know, she's 7 now. We've been here 7 years. If we get another 7 years out of this place, I'm well happy. If we can live here till we're 18, she's 18, wicked. And then we're traveling the world. We're off to Bali for 6 months of a year and so on. But you know, I have the same concerns and issues about longevity or being in the same place for your little ones for as long as you possibly can. And so if you want to put rents up, yeah, we'll put rents up. That's fine. We'll pay it. It's not a problem. And I think that most of our tenants would also do the same. So when you family-fy a property, you've given yourself the opportunity to have the people stay there as long as possible. Because there's two things that annoy landlords. One is voids. Well, quite a few things on our landlords. Voids, non-paying tenants. Do you think the family who wants to stay there a long time aren't going to pay rent? Of course not. They're going to pay the rent. Voids, we avoid voids. Maintenance is just part of the game. You can't avoid them, really. But putting a swing set in the back there, we'd jet wash that back. We'd remove the cladding, which is horrendous. We'd remove that door. Like, we'd keep the door, but we'd put a V-shaped thing at the back, and we'd do the same at the front. Let's just go back to the front. But yeah, look at that, you see. We would replace that and make that more attractive. Because this is ex-council, by the way. And so you want to make it look not like it's ex-council. So these are some of the things that we'll talk about. Now, we're going to cover some of the things that we're looking for. But obviously, this is a refurb. The lounge is fine. It probably just needs a refurb. That vestibule where the front door is, I don't know what's going on there. We might look at changing that. The garden's fine. Might have a bit more privacy at the back. I'm a bugger for privacy. That's all fine. In fact, you might even replace that bit of grass and put some more driveways in there. Because if you're going to convert this over to a HMO, for example, you want more driveways. If that's what you're doing, you might just be refurbing it. Depends what you're buying it for. I'd definitely keep those pink tiles and that pink suite. That's a joke, by the way. And the swirly carpet. Like, I like the 70s. So that needs to be changed. And those tiling on the roof, I remember those in my grand's house. So it's a very 1970s style, but that's all right. This is somebody's house and it's their style and that's fine. Everybody's different, I guess. The wallpaper would need to come off because that looks like the wood chip type. So on that one, you see, depends what you're buying it for. And I was hoping for a top-down view, because what I would actually do is I would open plan it. So I would open up the kitchen and the lounge and make it all one through. And then what I would do at the back is I would actually extend the back anyway, a little bit. Just depends. If I'm going to HMO that, I'm extending at the back. Just to create more space and potentially more bedrooms. So what are we looking for? Let's look at the numbers. 139. Let's pull up a calculator. 139. Oh, before we do that, let's have a look at Rightmove again. Where is this? It's LS10, isn't it? So let me just pull this over again, over to here. Let me open up another Rightmove thing. I just want to look at rents, LS10, because what we want to do is to see whether this house is going to be a suitable property to buy in order to rent out. We want to look at some of the comparables. So let me pull that back over. Where did that Rightmove go? I dropped it in somewhere. That's it there. Where is it? That one there. Okay, so let's just have a look at these. So what I want to look at is, I want to look at three beds for rent, because you want to see, is the property that's being sold and the property that are available for rent, how does that match each other? And so that's really what we're looking for there. So we're going to go lowest price, three beds. So these are house shares as well. So 275 and a house share on a four-bed house. I'm just wondering if it is actually a four-bed, or whether they've turned the four-bed into a five-bed, which they may well have done. But 275 a month sounds very cheap, by the way. Times four. Whoops. 275 times four times 12. It's 13,200. So if we divide that by 140 grand, which is the price of the other house, that's a 9.4% yield. So this one here, if you didn't touch it and you just rented it as is, that's your yield, effectively. But I reckon if you refurb this, obviously it needs a complete refurb, so you're going to be spending £10,000-£20,000 on that. Maybe 10, new kitchen, new bathroom, 10 to 15. Obviously prices have gone up recently for everything. But still, that would work as a HMO. That would work quite well. Let's move off HMOs. We've got a mid-terrace, 695. So it's probably not equivalent to this type of house. But this one here probably is. Modern decor throughout, 795. Another house is slightly more modern. At 795, I would suggest, is what this one would go for. Now, that as a yield, 795 times 12, divided by 140. 6.8. I don't think that's a good enough yield for me. We like to get 7.5%, 8% yield where possible. And also, you've got to do some work. So this is one of the things that you need to be aware of. And I saw this in a magazine once, and I was just pulling my hair out because it was driving me insane. And it was an example of what a property investor was doing that was a really great way of buying properties and being an investor. And this is what they did. They'd buy a house like this, and they'd have, you know, a 20% deposit, and they're spending £20,000 on the house, okay? So let's work out 140 grand, £28,000 deposit, plus another 20 grand to do it up. £48,000 was what they were investing, and they were getting an £800 a month rent. And that doesn't add up to me. So let's do the numbers. Minus 20%. So 112 times, let's do 4%. And I know that's not what interest rates are right now, but interest rates will go back up to that. We've had a historically low set of interest rates, and it bothers me that people think this is normal. It's not normal. If you're calculating at 2%, 3%, you're going to get hit when the interest rates go up. We've got inflation on its way, folks. Interest rates solves inflation, believe it or not. So interest rates have to go up at some point. Anyway, 4,480 divided by 12 is 373, 795 minus 373 is 420, call it £400 a month because you've got insurance, times 12. So you're getting, actually it doesn't work out too bad, but £40,000 divided by 4,800 is an 8.3% return on investment. It's not too bad. Obviously, you've got stamp duty that we've not included. You've got solicitor's fees that you have to include as well. So on that total investment, it's too much upfront for not enough return. And so this couple in this magazine, they were spending all this money doing this property up, and they were overpaying on their mortgage. And what they said was, yeah, but in 10 years' time, this will wash its face. And it's like, no, what are you on about? This, you know, this property needs to wash its face now on completion. We've completed on a property, one of the fastest properties we ever bought. We've done two. We did one in 7 days, and I think we did one in 11 days. The one that we did in 11 days was a city centre flat in Leeds City Centre that was on at like 165, 170. We put an offer in of 138, 500, something ridiculous. We completed at 141, 500. and we sort of, like, we were biting their hand off because it was a great deal. And it had been empty for 2 years. Anyway, we got keys and we were desperate for keys because we'd rented it. And the owners that we spoke to were like, have you rented it? It was empty on the market for ages. And they'd used the city centre company to do the rentals. And it's like, it's because you use them and they're not very good. They shall say stay unnamed. it's so tempting to name these people. But it's like, no, we've rented it. We need the keys because we've got tenants moving in. Like, that day was Friday. We've got tenants moving in Monday. So we've got to go in, put furniture in, get it rented. We rented it sight unseen, just from photographs that we took while we were going round initially, and that we took off a website. So, like, we don't mess around. We're not doing a refurb for 6 months just to get £800 a month. We might do a refurb for 6 months to make £20,000 or £30,000 on a flip. We might do that. But we're not doing it to rent out. And now, everything that I'm saying here is not financial advice. And also, don't forget that I'm a cash flow investor. I used to flip. I don't flip anymore. And in fact, one of my biggest regrets, let me just grab a quick drink. One of my biggest regrets, and by the way, I've got a few, was a city centre apartment in Leeds City Centre. I bought it for 84, we sold it for 95, I made 11 grand on it. I so regret selling that property now. This was 10 or 15 years ago. We would have had that property. And, you know, we made good returns on that. But we would have had that property. And actually, you know, I just got back from Leeds and I stayed in one of the hotels. I would love to have stayed in that little studio property. Big screen TV, Xbox, fridge full of wine. Happy days. So I kind of regret selling some of the stuff that we used to flip now when, you know, when I look back 23 years in the game, it's like, I should have held on to some more stuff. So this, for me, might make a great flip. If you're going to convert it to HMO, as long as it's not in an Article 4 area, it'd probably make a decent HMO. But it wouldn't, for me, make a great let. Not around 7.95. The yield's not high enough. And it also needs too much work up front. Is that making sense? Give me a yee-haw if it does, by the way. Let's go and have a look at some of the others. Just to have a look. Is that 100? Oh, it's public notice. You see, interestingly, a lot of these are too expensive for me right now. 140 grand? All three beds, 140? I mean, that's crazy. Not even in the right areas. Let's have a look at Leeds 16. I like Leeds 16, by the way. And I like Leeds 16 because some of those areas in Leeds 16 are nice and we've had good capital growth. I mean, 390, that's got to be a typo. It can't be 319. I reckon that's 139, by the way. That has to be 139. Let's have a look at it. We'll have a look at it in a second. There is no way is that 319. No wonder it's going to an auction. I don't care how sought after that is in LS 16. Let's have a look. It's quite fun doing these. I quite enjoy these anyway. I like looking at houses. I miss looking at houses. And what is that fireplace doing there? No wonder it's not selling. Like, knock that down and put the fireplace back where it is. That's not even a proper fire. I reckon that's an electric fire. So you can literally snip it, move it, plug it in, and off you go. And I don't know if that's a central chimney breast, but that is... That's not good. There you go. Three bed, one bath. Kitchen's okay. It looks like it's been refurbed. And if it has been refurbed, what? Who's done that with the fireplace? It just... I would not be buying that house. It's just a little bit bizarre. New carpets. I mean, the work's been done to a, well, reasonable level, I was about to say. But look at these wallpaper things here. Like, you want to know what annoys me? Like, we can't really zoom in on that, which is a bit of a shame. But I don't know what they've done on some of this work. Like, and the past one, I was saying it doesn't look too bad. But actually, I think the quality of the work could be better than it currently is. Outside's okay. It's got to be a typo on that 319. Useless bit of garden. Zero usage for that garden. All that's going to happen with that garden is going to get overgrown. I know this, by the way, because I've got a huge garden on one of mine. We just fenced it off and let the thing overgrow. There's probably aliens living in it and species from another world living in that. But that's clearly not accurate. And it's a shame because that's actually been refurbed. But that would You'd have problems renting that because the fireplace is in such a stupid place. This is just to show right now, if you're thinking about buying property, everything that we've spoken about sourcing property, is what you should be doing. You should not be looking on Rightmove, he says looking on Rightmove, looking for properties to purchase, because it is way overpriced. I mean, three bed detached for $275 is ridiculous. I've got one around there, around that area that I bought for $142, maybe 10 years ago. And I would say on a good day, it's worth $210. Looking at these, it's clearly worth more. Just bizarre. Even Iverson Crescent, by the way, again, it looks ex-council. Council houses all, and there's nothing wrong with ex-council, you know. In London, there's nothing wrong with ex-council, because London is such a strong conurbation with so many properties stuck so closely together. Up in Leeds, it means it's a council estate, and so you have different types of people living in there. It's not where I would live, that's for sure. And I actually own zero council properties. I think I might own two flats, actually, in one three-bed semi. But anyway, look at that. I think that it's an attractive interior. I think if you're thinking about buying properties and you are looking on Rightmove, you're gonna become unstuck. You're gonna have to find a way. I mean, it actually needs quite a bit of work. It needs a new kitchen, unless you like that kind of thing. I'm not sure what the yellow is about. The bathroom needs redoing. And it's a very 1980s house, and the carpets are from 1980s. Remember those carpets? And all the walls need stripping, and the ceiling needs... It's all got Artex on, which is, you know, very 1970s. Wowzers. So, it's all very overpriced right now. What I'm looking for when I'm buying houses is that it's got to stack up. The numbers have to stack, the yields have to stack. And I think right now, if you're going to be buying, and if you are going to be buying from somewhere like Rightmove, what you've got to be doing is you've got to be looking for stuff that you can add value to. And when I say add value, I mean split, like title split. If you can buy yourself a big, let's have a look at some much bigger houses. Let's go five bed and see what happens. And let's go Leeds, but let's also go a quarter mile around. Let me just make sure I can actually do this properly. Leeds, district of. And let's just see. So there's not too many, but lowest price, $250, five bed semi. Like this one here, it's a guide price, and I know it's a guide price, so it means it's going to an auction. But something like that, and it's on York Road, by the way. And I have a couple on York Road, as it happens. Now, interestingly, this one has already been done. A nice little Beamer sat out front. I'm guessing that's not the estate agents, by the way, because if you look underneath, that car's been left there before the rain. So I'm guessing that that's not the estate agents. That'll be the homeowners. And then as we go inside, it's clearly been refurbed. What I'm looking for here is shampoo bottles and that kind of thing. It looks like someone's been living in there, so they refurbed it as they went along. Yes, definitely people living in there. And it's already been extended, so they've bought this. If you look at next door and the one next door to that, they've bought this and they've done it up considerably. They've added what would you call that? A dormer attic, I guess you'd call that. And then they've increased the backyard and made it quite nice. And then they've ruined it with bright yellow paint inside. But anyway, that looks very nice. Shame it's in England, isn't it? A nice house in the wrong area, I would suggest. Let's go back. But what you're looking for is something big enough to be able to change and to be able to split into maybe two or three different apartments. Something like this, a LS6. It's rented at £26,000 per year. So that's not too bad. It's about, an 8% on a HMO? It's not too bad, I suppose. I know the first one was about 8%, wasn't it? But really, you're looking for... Everything is so highly priced. This one here, 395, six bed, in Oakwood. That might be a winner, by the way. So Oakwood is nice. And also this house, look at the outside. It's got paint peeling off. The garden is overgrown. I'm wondering if that window's been left open for people because there's nobody living in it. And so it's just to let air through. It's got an upstairs. But I'm expecting that this one actually needs a bit of work doing to it. And it's old. And look at the tiling. Definitely old. Look at the boiler. Look at the cupboards. It's definitely an old flat, so property, so it needs refurbing. So this one would actually make an interesting refurb. There's no top on the cistern there. So this one would actually make a good one. So what you would do with this one, like the backyard hasn't been used. There's an indoor table outside and there's a tiny little barbecue. But you could use that, you know, repaint it, put some potted plants in there and so on. That needs doing up. Now, if you could get planning permission on that, you could extend it to the rear and that would make a great HMO. Or we've not seen the plan, but that could make a good one to split, to title split into separate flats. And then, you own the freehold and then you've got maybe two or three separate units in that little place. Something like that. You're going to have to add value right now. That's the only thing that you can do in today's market, because the market's crazy. It's just absolutely crazy right now. So I hope that gives you a bit of an insight and an idea as to what I'm looking for, what I'm not looking for, and everything's different. But one of the best things about property is that you have so many different ways of doing property, so many different ways of making money and transforming a property into something else. Or is it long term? Is it a flip? Are you going to title split? Are you going to rent to rent? Are you going to HMO? Are you going to convert into separate flats? All these different ways of doing it. And that's one of the reasons why I love being in property. And at different periods in your career, you might use different properties for different things. You know, the three bed that's up in LS16, we might actually split that into an upstairs apartment and a downstairs apartment. Because depending what they're going for right now, let's just go and have a quick look. LS16. And let's have a look at one bed flats. Because that's Alexa trying to talk to me. Let's have a look at flats. We might actually get a better return on one bed flats. LS16, West Park, 105. Yeah, you're probably talking about the 110-ish, because it's nicer than that one. 110, 115. So it probably doesn't quite stack up to do that. But we'll wait another couple of years and see where it is. And maybe we'll wait a couple of years and nothing can change and it's just worth 230 or whatever without doing anything to it. But this is the beauty of property, is that it can change depending on whatever it happens to be that you want to do. So look, I hope that's useful for you, a bit of an insight into how we actually do things. Let me know in the box down below and we'll speak to you on the next video. Until tomorrow, my name's Dan Latta. Take care. Hey, it's Dan here. Thank you for listening. Really appreciate each and every one of you. Please click like or subscribe to the entire podcast.